Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I think that the New Day is the best thing in WWE not named Brock Lesnar. Wrestling hasn't seen a nosedive like Bayley since Brutus Beefcake was in that toll booth. And as far as Charlotte goes, Eric Watts called and said your dropkick sucks.
I'm G. John Chase, and unfortunately Hulk Hogan has decided to write in again asking for my advice. Hulk Hogan went to the cinema to see a movie, and he had difficulty trying to find his seat because it was so dark in there. And he accidentally bumped into a black guy and said, "Sorry, I didn't see you there. Is this racist?" Well, Hulk, yes. It is.
I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and I've got a little bit of stick on Twitter this week because I declare that Eva Marie is a better worker than Sasha Banks. Now, this has nothing to do with the fact that Liam told me Sasha's engaged, and has nothing to do with the fact that Sasha's refused to respond to any of my tweets. It's just that I see something special in Eva Marie, namely myself.
And I'm Carl Jones, and after SummerSlam this week, I have neither the will nor inclination to try and be humorous in my intro. Fuck you, McMahon.
This is the panel for the 52nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about NXT, SummerSlam, Raw and beyond, next.
Drums, please.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 52nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
It's a new day!
Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening y'all.
And the ever enthusiastic Carl Jones.
Yay.
Come on Carl, that attitude's booty.
Booty attitude. We are back with you today to discuss the big three shows of this past weekend, NXT in Brooklyn, SummerSlam, and of course Monday Night Raw. A lot to talk about over this past week. It's going to be very interesting to get to all the major points of discussion. Just a quick programming note for next week, we are going to be going back to our feedback heavy format, because next week we're going to be discussing the luckiest and unluckiest wrestlers in the history of the business, and of course we want your suggestions, so get them into us, guaranteed we'll read them on the air at scgradio@hotmail.com. Send them along, we will read them. Of course, I'm going to put that out on the message boards as well. But yeah, luckiest and unluckiest. That's going to be quite a fun one next week. That could be quite a humorous show, I feel. So getting to this, of course, Carl, your depression in the intro kind of caught me off guard. Somewhat cynical, I'm guessing. Not a fan of SummerSlam.
As a sort of top-to-bottom show, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I enjoyed the show as a whole. Always helps having a hot crowd like we got in Brooklyn on all three nights, it has to be said. But I was not a fan of the finish in the main event. I think it was Alvarez who said on their show this week that he could accept it as the finish if you were intent on Undertaker getting the win. Well, I just have an issue with the general principle, as I think we all do around the table.
Absolutely. And again, we mentioned this on the 50th show. You can go back and listen to it at squaredcirclegazette.com, the mailbag show, when somebody emailed and specifically asked what we wanted out of Brock Taker 2. And the general consensus around the table was a mauling from Brock Lesnar. You didn't get this here, Carl. Is it just the point of you just object strongly to dragging this out for another 6 months to WrestleMania?
Yeah, I think the phrase I used was I wanted Lesnar to kill him in 5 minutes, something words to that effect. And I knew realistically I was never going to get that from the match. But I at least hoped against hope that Lesnar was still going to win.
And you did I really
didn't want to believe, regardless of the circumstances, they would give Taker a win back. Just to get to Mania. I mean, maybe it's just me. I'll put it to you three. Are any of you really excited at the prospect of a third Lesnar-Taker match? Has this done anything for you, really?
Well, we said before, I under no circumstances wanted to see Taker win, and I absolutely did not want to see a third match. But that being said, I thought the finish was brilliant. I thought they went max protect on Brock in a way. It was for me to for Taker to show his ass that much, it was almost the equivalent of the Cena mauling in a different way, obviously. I mean, I just never expected them to go so, well, yeah, max protect on Brock. I thought it was a really good finish. They didn't weaken Brock in the booking. It was, you know, the intention to protect Brock was still there. And I actually do want to see a third match now because I want Brock to kill him. So.
Okay, but with that in mind, just before Liam and G jumping in, do you think Lesnar wins a third match? Can you say that with any degree of confidence?
Yeah, I think it. Well, yeah, I thought he was going to win this one. the way it was booked, yeah, I think if it's going to be Taker's last match, then absolutely Lesnar wins.
I think after that match, he kind of has to.
There's a lot of things that logically they would have to do.
Yeah, I understand. I'm leaning more towards Kieran than I am yourself here, Carl, because I think that when we watched this back, I mean, obviously, when we watched it, that gut feeling from all of us, and you could tell from the crowd, to the actual execution of the finish, until you see the whole thing in its entirety, until you see the story play out, you could just dampen the crowd. I mean, watching it live the first time, it's like, this is getting a bit messy here.
Yeah, because you need that replay, don't you?
You need the full story, and that's the point. I mean, and that's why I don't have a problem with the finish as such, because the whole idea was The Undertaker tapped out to Brock Lesnar. Lesnar didn't tap out to The Undertaker. He gave him the finger, and he only choked him out after he punched him in the balls, which is just heelish as it gets. I was very impressed with how much they sacrificed The Undertaker. The one thing that I said they never seem to do is prostitute The Undertaker without giving him back in the end. Of course, this comes to your point, Carl, of the dread of WrestleMania in Texas. Is Taker going to get back in the end? I pray no. But as for the actual match and the finish, the match was significantly better than the WrestleMania match.
Yeah, let me just interject quickly and say it. As a match, whilst I'm not a fan of the finish and the guy went over, I will say, in comparison to the Mania match, it was, you know, night and day, and, you know, just goes to show what difference a concussion can make.
You wanted Taker to be dead in five. To be honest, he was dead after about 15 seconds from that intro, because he was fucking... Oh, he was sucking air.
He was blowing out of his ass. It was great when Brock just bum rushed him. Great start to the match. I was dreading the idea of Lesnar standing there while he took his hat off, you know.
On the mailbag show, I think I asked for a raping. I think piece specific on the Brock Undertaker match, and it didn't quite get that, but maybe a slipped finger was probably what I got there, because I thought, yeah, the crowd was also great because they were kind of mixed as well, because you did have the Undertaker fans. But, you know, you also primarily, I think there's more probably Brock fans than Undertaker ones.
I don't know. I didn't see it that way. I saw it as the more Taker fans than Lesnar.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I was actually quite surprised. I thought it would be more mixed than it actually was. I would argue it was something like 70-30 Taker to me. It
wouldn't go that far. Yeah. Maybe 60-40, but it was still close. As you said, the on the night, it was confusing as hell. But that's by design, and, you know, the emphasis and the explanation was hit home so hard straight away rather than leaving to the next night. By the time the next night comes around, the crowd was, it kind of swung a lot more in Brock's favour, and they, you know, they were eating up the angle. So I thought it was really good, really well booked, good stuff.
If that was the main purpose of the finish, then, was to just kind of solidify Brock as that kind of babyface, then yeah, it's that thing of, like, the actual angle itself could have been executed slightly better, but at the same time, I'm actually going to sit on the fence more about this, rather than choose between the two camps here. But in the context of what they've got planned, so in their heads, they're thinking Brock Undertaker at WrestleMania. If that's the case, yeah, I can actually understand that, because if it was like, if Brock beat him a second time, then obviously why have a third match? So Undertaker had to do it, but at the same time, Brock had to be kind of screwed over in some way. And I agree with Kieran in just that. Brock looked incredibly strong throughout. I mean, he dominated the match, at least as far as I remember. And the fact that, you know, Undertaker did tap and Brock didn't. And rather than tap to the Undertaker, he flips him off, which I just thought was so Brock-esque. That's like, that's his character. That's his, like, you know what, fuck you. I'd rather actually go through being choked out than have to tap to this piece of shit. You know, he's cheating his way through. But saying that, I can understand that's why that's the way they went in order to get to WrestleMania, if that's where they're going. But I still didn't like it. I think it should have just been Brock Lesnar straight win, and then done. And then they could have gone and wherever they wanted to with Undertaker, whether it was with Sting or whatever, Cena, whatever they want to do. As far as I'm concerned, I kind of want Brock back in the direction of the title. I kind of want him going after that belt again.
Well, if, as Meltzer rumoured that it's Taker's career will be on the line, you would think that Brock might be the champ going into that, then, possibly. Why would Taker
put his career on the line?
I
can see Heyman for that, because Taker's not going to be around, so I can see Heyman for the next 6 months doing what he did the first time, just going around and spinning the story and saying, no, take a tap, it didn't count, and therefore Taker wants the match where it does count the most, at WrestleMania, the scene of the crime, so to speak. It has to be a situation where Taker has to put it on the line, surely.
But the logic of the booking where it's Brock's the one who wants the third match now because he was fucked over and he wants to kill The Undertaker.
Yeah.
So I don't really see that as the
hook. Unless Brock's got something, but I don't see Brock as the champ at WrestleMania. I really don't.
The issue I think you'd have there is, despite the way Undertaker has acted in the build to the SummerSlam match, because it's, you know, it's just an incredible heel act to do that to Lesnar, and then you go into the build-up to Mania where you'd be portraying Taker as the heel in front of a Texas crowd that aren't going to boo him. I will say this, I disagree with you a bit, G, in the sense of the execution of the finish. The execution was fine. As a finish, it works. My issue is the general principle of Taker going over, and I firmly believe you still could have, if you're dead set on doing the third match, you can do it with Lesnar winning twice.
But then, to me, he has to win the thing. Like, yeah. Taker has to win in the end, and I would rather Taker not win in the end. Well, to me, if this is a mechanism, if they're hell bound determined to do this match, and I can see your point in they shouldn't. But at the same time, I was thinking about the other day after we did that the mailbag show. As a matter of fact, where else do you go with Brock for WrestleMania? Because if it's not the world title, then you're kind of left with nothing that's as big anyway.
True, but then again, my argument there is they shouldn't have done this match. This match shouldn't have happened at SummerSlam. I understand they want to make the event big. They want mainstream publicity. And at the end of the day, it's a network show now. So, you know, you're not pulling for those buy rates like you were, because people have already got the network anyway.
Yeah, and look, the flip side of that, though, is, and again, maybe it's all for nothing anyway, like you said, but the point, my idea is, if he comes back for the revenge on Brock, that's it for Brock as a babyface, because he's immediately cast as the guy we don't want to win, because the people are going to be so invested in the Taker revenge story, in theory, if it's at WrestleMania in Texas, blah, blah, blah. Doing it this way, it at least creates a bit of a mixed thing, where Brock doesn't get all of his babyface momentum shit-canned, because he's forced into this role, which was the thing that I hated when they did the angle at Battleground initially, because I could just see, you've just turned Brock babyface.
First thing we said, wasn't it, that was that, you know, heels and faces don't matter anymore. And to an extent, with a match like this, you can understand it, because it's, in theory, it's the mega dream match. But you still had Taker, did play the subtle heel in the end, and that's how it was booked. And that's why, for me, it was encouraging. You know the fear was, it's Taker, he's their guy, who will be protected. And I always thought that with the money invested in Brock, and they've got 3 years guarantee with him, they wouldn't sacrifice him, and they didn't. And so that's why, for me, I was encouraged. If that's their match at Mania, then fine. They went about it in the absolute right way for me. So
yeah, and they actually did create a reason for me to want to watch this match.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you explained, with it being in Texas, the next Mania, is that no matter really what they kind of do to try and protect Brock or portray him as the babyface or the more babyface-y kind of wrestler in the feud, it's still that risk of, you know, the local audience hijacking it and going to be in favour of Undertaker.
Is Taker synonymous with Texas, though?
To a degree, I think
not
he
like,
is.
It's not this.
I never thought so. I thought like Austin, definitely. Yeah. But I thought, because particularly if Austin's not performing, which I'm gathering he isn't, they know he's a Texan. So I don't know. I'm just kind of assuming that.
It's also the Mania crowd.
That's what I was going to say.
It's an international crowd. So it's
okay. The dynamic of the local hero, it will be there to some degree, and I think it would be there in bigger droves if Austin was wrestling. But in terms of Undertaker, since it is so many fly-ins, I don't think the local thing would be as much of an issue as it was at, say, WrestleMania 17, when it was clearly Texas strong, if you will. Well, I'm keen to move along here, because we've got so much to discuss from this 3-day period. Let's move on now to the state of the WWE Championship. Everyone's thoughts on Cena and Rollins as a match, the interference of Jon Stewart. Is this another thing that irked you, Carl, about this show?
Not at all.
As a Jon Stewart fan, I'm sure.
I am a Jon Stewart fan. In fact, he's not aging well from his brief end to the Daily Show. He's sort of going to hell in a handbasket quickly, but I thought it was easily the match of the three nights, let alone SummerSlam. Absolutely fantastic. A brilliant performance from Rollins. I have no issue with the finish whatsoever. And I appreciated the explanation more on Raw than I would, in the sense of, you know, you get the typical promo after why I did it and the act all here. So I like the fact that it was different in this sense. It was clearly just Jon Stewart fan not wanting to see Ric Flair have his record tied. That's something that just makes it so much more logical to me than, you know, the character that does the 180 and acts heelish all of a sudden out of nowhere. So I appreciated it in that sense. But it's all about the follow-up now for Rollins. It's all about how you follow it up, because it's all well and good him beating Cena and having a great performance on the night. If 3 weeks from now we're in the same situation we were a month ago, 2 months ago, where he just gets the long promo on SmackDown, the long promo on Raw, loses every other week, then it will have all been for nothing.
Yeah, I think the match was the best match on the SummerSlam show. I think, I mean, it's just another typical, like, A-grade performance from Cena, in terms of just, like, not just showcasing himself, but showcasing someone else as well, you know, which he's done before. But I thought it was a really kind of almost bordering on breakout performance for Rollins in terms of being the champion for me, because I think, like, and Carl just emphasised the point just there about, like, how before SummerSlam, Rollins being given a bit of a bum deal as champion, they haven't really kind of built him up as strongly as he could have been. Brooklyn crowd, who like their heels, obviously kind of helped in kind of portraying Rollins like a big star, because they were completely behind him and just trying to bury Cena under, you know, tons of shit. The John Stewart interference, I don't know about that one. I like John Stewart too, but it's one thing Tyson being involved as like a ring like an enforcer, but as someone to a slightly lower level of celebrity in John Stewart, with all respect, I don't quite agree with. And though I actually thought, and him and similar with Stephen Amell as well, I thought both of them on the show actually performed really well within the confines of what their jobs were. But you see, he was just enjoying himself, and he just liked being a part of it. Probably got a kick out of turning heel or whatever. But yeah, I'm a bit kind of more on the fence of whether I thought his involvement was right, being involved in the main event.
You're riding the fence all night tonight.
I'm going to be honest. I will get. I'm on the fence for just the two main events. I'm not on the fence for anything else.
Everything that matters.
Everything that matters. Saying that though, with the promo, yeah, it was a little bit different. Where he just comes out and just says, "I didn't like the fact that Cena could equal Ric Flair's record." I agree with that, because that's honing into the Brooklyn crowd. Obviously, the one thing I just didn't like, and this is just like a little kind of minor detail, I then didn't like Ric Flair coming out and saying, "I was actually cheering him because, you know, eventually records are supposed to be broken." Ric Flair would never say that.
I think Ric Flair,
like the person in real life,
Ric Flair,
would think that
the Nature Boy.
Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, Slick Rick, would never fucking say that. Slick Rick would fucking shake his hand and just say, like, "I would have done it myself, you know, I was thinking the exact same thing, you just beat me to it, that's all." And so Slick Rick should have been grateful and not turned around and said, "Oh, I wanted John Cena to win myself."
So you preferred for Flair to have done the run himself?
I think I would have, actually. I think that would have got that in that town as well, at City. So that would have got a huge pop if Flair came out to screw Cena over.
Especially you got the dynamic of Flair, Trips, and Rollins all fucking blowing each other. Yeah. That's the whole
someone else for Seth to be subservient to.
Yeah, exactly. And also,
just to hark back to when we were talking about the Batista storyline from a while ago, when they did the eventual, just going ahead in the podcast, when they did the Sting reveal on the next show, if Flair was there with them doing like the freaking like the shocked face like with Batista's thumb down, that would have been fucking gold.
Yeah, I see, the thing is, Scott, I'm actually surprised, because if I had to put money on this, and we didn't speak about this before the show, because knowing I have like kind of joint philosophy of it's always about what's next, I would have put money that you thought Brock and Taker made sense in the long run. I'm not sure where this goes. It was clearly an attention grab.
Yeah, that's...
And that's really all there is to it. Yeah. But I mean, once he's... Okay, so he's done the AA. So short of this being a Kevin Federline situation where he's just going to appear out of nowhere in a few months' time, I don't really see... I mean, it does go nowhere.
I think it's probably done now, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm not expecting Stewart to be back.
Yeah, similar to you guys, I love the match. The Stewart involvement, I love John Stewart, I think he's great.
He's fantastic.
He's good for wrestling. I don't have a problem with the attention grab. Yeah, where does it go? It's wacky. Have they missed an opportunity for someone else who could have got some steam out of it? And similarly, putting the belt on to Rollins, it's kind of, is he going to gain something more than actually just booking him as like a proper champion would have got him to begin with? I do think, though, in the build up since he's been working with Cena and probably breaking his nose has helped, the focus on Rollins has been better.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's kind of turning around, getting him away from the faction. Kane obviously out of the way probably helps as well, the distraction. So I think the kind of, he's starting to get on track, so in that respect it was a perfect showcase performance at the perfect time with him getting momentum. Not sure how long he holds both belts for.
Probably 1 month, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think that's what I said. I think the follow up is key here. You know, it's all about where they go next with Rollins. I don't have any issue with the quick blow off to the Stewart thing. I think it was fine for the night. It was fine to tie it up on Raw. It's all about what you do with Rollins now.
Though I will say, Rollins working as a total baby.
I was going to bring that up, because, and he wasn't the only one on the show who did it, and he got away with it because his opponent was John Cena.
Exactly. I think we've seen it with Owens as well.
But that's what I was going to say. And I don't think he did get away with it as well as Rollins did here, because I think that he had a foil that it didn't benefit the match for him to work that way, whereas with Rollins, it clearly did. One of the key things with Rollins, what you said there about that this being a breakthrough in general, whether it be from a personal performance or from a booking standpoint, we need to see more of what he saw on Raw, where it was Triple H and Steph paving the road for him as the big stars, as opposed to they're the big stars and Rollins is just the guy there. You know,
statue.
Yeah, exactly. The statue, the Triple H fucking, it's all about Rollins kind of a thing.
I totally agree, but I think we are kind of guilty of, we always point the finger and say that we book week to week, and I think we are also guilty, and I'll include like the rest of the Observer guys as well, of judging storylines on a week to week as well, not looking at a bigger picture. And I don't know, maybe come WrestleMania time we look at the development of Rollins, and there is a story there, and he was nurtured to start with, and then he came into his own, and then he grew, and then he became, you know, rather than just being slap bam the JBL straight away the top guy. There's a character out there, so we're not wrong in criticising how he was dealt with, but I think maybe a bit of patience, and just let, you know, if they let the character grow and then he is pushed and presented as the guy from now on, there's no argument to be made. He's, you know, there's a story of him growing into the role from when he was picked, you know, and nurtured and brought through. So I don't know, I think maybe you have to look maybe back with hindsight sometimes as well, rather than just jumping on the moment too much.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Night of Champions, I think he's going to be defending two belts at different points in the night. I'm assuming probably the first match and the last match, and I'm almost going to guarantee he's going to lose one of them. It's just which way they want to do that. But the only kind of issue I actually kind of had on the lead up to this match, and it was kind of highlighted for me on Raw when Cena cut his promo. Either Cena shouldn't have been United States champion going in, or the United States shouldn't have been on the line and it should have just been for the world title, because this is how this is supposed to be working it. But when Cena did the promo on Jon Stewart, and he goes, Cena was really good as
though.
United States champion. Well, yeah, that's the same way. It's probably doing a good job of getting me pissed off, but it's just like, so I just thought, fuck, I really enjoyed that run. And I didn't actually want it to end, or if it did end, I wanted it to be someone other than Rollins, who's like the world champion, and be someone else to carry on with the United States title. So it's just there's this little niggly thing for me where I'm just kind of like, I wish they didn't put the title on the line. It was just a straight up for the world title, and so Cena could continue doing the good job he has been most of the year. Where do you see Rollins going now with this belt? Do you see him holding this title till WrestleMania, or do you see him losing it before then?
The world title or US title?
World title.
Well, they're obviously invested in him, so if they're not going to go, if they're not going to do Seth and Triple H at Mania, when the title shouldn't be involved, then I would suspect he probably will hold the world title.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you got to think he's got to be a better option than Sheamus right now.
Oh, fucking Sheamus.
Yeah, that cannot happen. That can absolutely not happen in any way. I don't see, please, dear God, do not give Sheamus the world championship right now.
If he's not going to keep it till Mania, who logically can take it off him? Who could they put it on for a while?
You're not a big fan of Sting getting the belt?
Come on.
In a word?
Who are you talking
no.
to?
Yeah, that handshake between Triple H and Sting at the end of their Mania match looked real fucking clever now, doesn't it?
Yeah, so does the result of that match, as a matter of fact.
Jesus Christ. Okay. But no, there is no one at the moment you could put the belt on instead of Rollins going into Mania as things stand now, and things can change, but you look at the roster and the way it's constructed now, I don't see any reason to take the belt off him and put it on someone else. I can see him keeping it till Mania, because who else would they go with?
The only possible scenario is the one we mentioned earlier in the podcast, funnily enough, where if Taker doesn't accept the Brock match, Brock wins the title, and then Taker comes back to try and take it from him at the biggest WrestleMania of all time, because he knows he can beat Brock now, and then Brock says, no motherfucker, if you want a shot at me, then you got to put your career on the line to get
it. That's exactly what the thought process was, really. It's anything really makes sense
that way. You get Seth and Triple H at WrestleMania separately, and
although on Twitter at Wrestling Prophet, Dave Meltzer says that Seth and Triple H isn't the plan.
Oh, okay.
Did I asked him.
He confirmed that to you?
Yeah, we're pretty tight on Twitter.
Cool.
Twitter bros.
Twats.
That's what I meant by when we were talking about Brock saying, like, I'd rather see him angled towards the title, because, as Cole mentioned, there isn't anyone else. It's pretty much two people who are now seen as kind of like he's been dealt with now, essentially, because they're going with Sting for the Night of Champions. So Cena's essentially been dealt with. It's pretty much a two-horse race. And if they're going to, like, shut Brock off with Undertaker,
they have to now. They have no choice but to put all their money in Rollins as champion.
The only other thing, with the big dark cloud of Sheamus hanging over us, Seth ends up face and Sheamus takes it off him, and then it'll be in Sheamus Seth at Mania maybe.
Oh, that just doesn't sound like money at all.
No, but they like Seth, and we know they like Sheamus, so in their mind I can see it.
Yeah, so seeing we're on the subject of Rollins, we might as well talk about the new angle now leading into Night of Champions, which I wasn't expecting. In the back of my mind, I kind of knew that like Sting somewhere in the background, like they're going to bring him in again. I thought it was going to be Survivor Series again, but
he's loitering.
He's loitering in the shadows. But yeah, I thought it was kind of well done. Though I don't quite know how to make of the reveal, because it wasn't what I was expecting. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but it was just the thought of, I was expecting for the box or whatever to rise up and the statue be there, but the statue has the face paint on. It's been defiled and it's been painted to look
jokered.
It's been jokered and it's been made to look like Sting, and everyone just freaks out like, what the fuck? And then you hear the croak of the crow, and then the lights go out, come back on, and Sting standing there. That's what I was expecting. So I almost chuckled when it revealed and Sting's just standing there. It's just like, there's no statue at all. So I was like, how the fuck did he get in the box?
Nah, I knew it wasn't going to be the statue, because that's why they showed the statue early in the show. So it's like, okay, so there's going to be a bait and switch here.
Yeah.
I just...
Did it strike anyone else that the matches seemed a lot quicker in pace than you would normally associate with, say, a typical four-hour show? If there is such a thing as a typical four-hour show, but... It just sort of struck me quite a lot of matches. I'd sit and think, they're getting through what you would consider the wrestlers' quote-unquote spots very quickly here. It just struck me as a bit odd. Is that anything else anyone picked up on?
No, I think it's fair to say, because I understand what you mean about the typical four-hour show, where, because I mean, we're conditioned to WrestleManias, where they really drag things out, and they don't do match the way that... This was pretty much just an extended version of a regular pay-per-view. They didn't have those unnecessary buffers apart from at the very beginning. So I think that goes to the pace somewhat. Moving on to more about this show. Obviously, there's a lot going on here. NXT we haven't broached yet.
Yeah.
We can get into other aspects of SummerSlam and Raw later on in the podcast. But talking NXT now, women's match was the best match on the show. I'm keen to see what you think on this, Carl, because I this might be the first time that you might have to confess to this.
I was hoping you weren't going to say anything then and just throw it to the floor, because I wanted to shock the world. But damn, you preempted me. Well, as loyal listeners know, and you fine folks around the table, when it comes to women's wrestling, I speak the truth. So let me just say, without any qualms whatsoever, it was, I think, comfortably the best match on the card. Obviously, the fans ate it up. It was a really enjoyable match. But unfortunately, when it comes to the women in the WWE, it's a case of the old Paula Abdul, you know, one step forward, two steps back.
Oh, and of course, this leads to the ultimate thing. And we can just throw it out to the table, broad strokes. The NXT match compared to what we saw at SummerSlam and Raw.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad that Carl the Hammer Valentine over there has managed to find some enjoyment in at least one of the women's matches that was over
the
name.
I'll explain it afterwards.
Explain it later. As bad as the Divas matches were on SummerSlam and Raw, in complete contrast was how good the NXT women's match was from beginning to end. And I thought the women's match was, for me, just one above the Cena-Seth Rollins match. And it was because of the general storyline and also the work rate as well, because I watched all the NXT, so I saw the storyline that they were building with Bayley, how she had to go through Emma and Charlotte and Becky in order to get the title shot. You know, Sasha acting like a complete dick during the contract signing. The opening promo that they played before the match as well, which I thought was really well done, where it's the four women that are trying to make a difference. Bayley gets the injury, and then like Marty McFly in Back to the Future, her image is disappearing from the photo, you know, as it's showing like the other three debuting on Raw or winning titles or whatever. And so I just kind of like, I really liked how they went about it, where it feels like Bayley's being left behind here, and it's not fair, because she was on the same level as everyone else. And so it's just like, I just really enjoyed the story, and I thought like the match was fantastic, built really well, great finish. Yeah, the curtain call at the end was...
Oh, that was bullshit. I'm calling... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm jumping in here, because I'm calling bullshit on the curtain call. I will give the match itself all the credit in the world. It was a really good match. I loved the psychology around what they did with Bayley Sandow. I thought that was all brilliant. The curtain call. I mean, what the fuck, people? It's 2015. Whilst that audience may have eaten it up, we can't avoid the wider point, is that three of these women are on Raw, they're feuding on Raw, and the other one's got nothing to do with it all. So that, what is the point in this curtain call, other than a nice little pat on the back for everyone, which makes no sense to the wider context of their angle?
And you got Sasha's crew in the crowd as well, which they showed. So it's like, well, okay, is this going to lead to an angle? Are they going to like beat her up? And no,
just, yep, no, like, they're just going to sit there like no marks.
I completely agree, but it's, you say it yourself, it's servicing that audience.
Which... Or Triple H trying to, after all these years, insist that he was in the right in 1996.
No, I agree with Carl on that one. I didn't like that. I think Bayley is below average in terms of women's workers. So the fact that they had the match of the night shows you how fucking great my girl Sasha is. Literally, you could pick apart little indiness things she does, like the fucking leg kick when she goes for pins, and just the general dynamic of her body and when certain selling points. But
I thought smiling too much.
Yeah, goddamn. You know, it's such a be a fucking babyface if you want to be a babyface. Or maybe it doesn't matter in NXT. That's the point. But to that point, I thought the finish was fantastic. The reverse Hurricanrana. Absolutely got the crowd right behind Bayley at the exact right time, so yeah. They got the full pop from the crowd for the finish, so that was brilliant. That is good stuff. Props to Sash.
Yeah, but let's just, again, we were talking wider context here, bigger picture, because on SummerSlam, I wouldn't say SummerSlam or Raw were particularly bad matches. I've seen far worse women's matches on Raw previously. But the point is that there's just a massive disconnect. And just the fact that The Miz was able to get a pop in New York over the women just speaks volumes to how far off the beaten path the booking has gone. And to be honest, the women aren't up to par on the major shows either. And that's why we have some people to hear. Actually, I just want to throw it here because Gareth Holloway and Andy Johnson did write in and ask us if we thought that the women were good enough to main event because they thought they were as good as the guys. No. Which... I strongly disagree with it at this point. Just the disconnect. NXT, a great overall package. The video, like G mentioned, the intros with Sasha and the car and Bayley with the stupid tube things.
It's wacky with the inflatable arm, man.
Yeah, exactly. Which is great though. And then you get the finish. And even if the curtain call wasn't to everybody's taste, and again for the audience that they're in front of, they ate it up. So I guess from start to finish thing,
it was in the video beforehand.
But it was by far the best thing on the show anyway. Regardless, it's better than the ladder match. It's better than the undercard. Just seeing that, and then just because it's in the same building one day later, and the people just they just didn't care. They didn't really get into it all that much. The heat wasn't there at all. And granted, they come after Cena and Rollins, so they're gonna have a tough time anyway. But on Raw, there's no excuse, and they just absolutely got eaten up. And the fact that Paige and the Bellas went on Twitter and complained about it and tried to knock the fans.
Well, that's just the mentality of Paige and the retard twins. Because the others won't put like shit up on Twitter because they kind of know what the deal is and just think, well, okay, then let's try and make sure that doesn't happen again. Whilst those three just run their mouths. There seem to be two teams. I'm talking about like the behind the scenes. So whether it's the agents or whatever, the people who write the angles, whatever. There's one team that's working well, and then there's another team where it's not. And one team needs to continue doing what they're doing or be promoted, and the other team need to be fucking fired because they're dropping the ball. And I think you know which one's which, okay? Because Raw is just completely behind. And I don't know the specifics of who works on what. I think is it Sarah Del Rey, is it, that does the NXT stuff?
She
helps out a lot. And
but even then, let's not completely delude ourselves here. On NXT, the TV show, the women's matches are not that much better than what we're seeing on Raw. But and that's the thing, in general, NXT, the TV show, doesn't blow me away. The specials are great. They're absolutely fantastic. But people are getting this end that they're so caught up in the idea of the NXT buzz. But the women's... I mean, that match that we watched, Becky versus... it was Becky versus Bayley, Sasha on commentary. Sasha was terrible on commentary. The match didn't have anything going for it, in my opinion. It's not this thing where, again, and it goes back to the point of they're not ready to main event. They might be okay to main event in NXT, where it doesn't really matter if they're in the main event.
Obviously, the issue you've got... And we talk about the difference between the two shows. Obviously, and I think other people have referenced this... How long would Sasha Banks and Bayley have had to work on that singles match? And I'm not knocking them for working on it and creating a really good match. I have no issue with people pre-planning matches if if that's what works for them. I have no issue with that.
Ends but, justify the means.
Exactly. But the issue you've got is, on NXT, you have an environment in which they can do that. You're not going to get that on Raw. You're not going to get that with so many moving parts and the way things can change. You know, we've talked before about how sort of fluid the show is in terms of preparation at times. So you're not going to get the time to plan everything out like they do. So that's going to harm them. We talk about NXT. The women's matches on NXT don't go as long as that match did on Raw. Don't normally go as long as that SummerSlam match did. So there's an issue there as well. A lot of these women, in particular the Bellas, the Alicia Fox of this world, aren't used to working that length of match, and it shows.
Or style,
absolutely.
If the general dynamic of the Divas of Revolution isn't working on the main roster, then it means that they should take them back off and put them back onto NXT and make that a thing on NXT, because if they're going to be much better, much more nurtured and showcased better on NXT than on the main roster, then they should be on NXT and make that like a big thing for NXT, which is like make that a selling point for NXT, because NXT is a selling point for the network, because they should be using that. If it's just going to get nothing but diluted on the main show, then don't fucking dilute it. Put it on the NXT show where it can thrive, because the matches, the in terms of the matches of quality on the NXT shows, I don't agree with you. I'm not saying all of them are absolute classics or to the level of TakeOver. There is obviously an obvious level increase as soon as they go to TakeOver shows, and you do get the you know, the women's matches. There are like the squash matches that like Dana Brooks has and so on. You still get title matches on the main show. So, you know, you still get like a Sasha Banks versus Charlotte and so on, and those matches are just as good.
This for me is the point, that on NXT, you're talking about this, how great the women's wrestling on NXT is. You're talking Charlotte, Sasha, Becky's had one maybe really good match with Sasha, Bayley's had the one with Sasha. So you're talking about, you know, two talents.
And Natalya too, who was a part of some really good ones too, but isn't being used at all in this.
Yeah. No. But the point is, it's when it's such a concentration anyway. If you take those, the girls, the Bellas and all those, those nine girls and put them onto NXT, you're still going to have a load of shitty matches. You may have, because they've got the prep time, they will have the one better match. But on your week-to-week basis, there's going to be no big difference for me. It's still the concentration of talent and concentration on shows. So I think it's just showcases it better, and they can get, you know, on those isolated instances, they get time to shine. And plus the crowd is, whether they're conditioned to be more acceptable of it or just because it's just the expectation going in. They're not going to chant JBL during... on NXT during a women's match.
There's definitely like a class system amongst, if you just took the NXT women in total, there are four women who are like really solid performers, and then you get like the kind of the medium ones who, like, you know, they can get through a match, you know, but they're still developing, people like Alexa Bliss and so on, and then you get like the Eve Maries who are just like, you know, they're gonna have dog shit.
Scream from the right rooftops in favor of Alexa Bliss, frankly.
Well, there's a reason she's a manager, completely
smoke and mirrors if that's what people feel about people like Alexa Bliss. Probably not even as good as the Bellas, for fuck's sake, who cares?
So, you know, you are going to get, like, you know, some drag matches or whatever, same as you would with the men's wrestling as well. In terms of, like, how they prepare NXT, because not everyone's on every week, certain people are, like Kevin Owens or whatever, but the Divas aren't always. Like, Sasha Banks might have, like, one match in a month, part of the reason why it works so much, because none of them are getting oversaturated with the fans. So in terms of, like, saying, like, oh, you know, Becky's had, like, two good matches or whatever, it's just like, well, she hasn't had that many matches because
exactly.
She has like one
exactly
month,
though exactly though. That's the point. Yeah. That preparation time, if you only have one match a month and that's all you have to work on, then it's going to be a hell of a lot better than when you've got to wrestle every week and you've got to be a bit more innovative and think a bit more creatively.
If that's not going to work then on Raw and SmackDown, then don't do it on Raw and SmackDown. Then make it its own NXT thing. If it's successful there, keep it where it's successful. Don't try and spread it out, because the whole thing with this angle, and I was saying this to the other day, Liam, this three-team angle just reeks of it's for the benefit of the Bellas. And the thing is, what they don't get is that, in particular with the Bellas, they're the problem. And this Divas Revolution, won't work until, as you said, they manage to figure out how to kind of work these matches properly. Stop with this like three diva factions that's going on, because it's not working, these multi-man tag matches.
Yeah, you're right.
And get the fucking belt away from Nikki Bella.
Yeah,
it's just like get them away. If they can do a thing where the Night of Champions, Charlotte challenges her, Charlotte gets the belt, and then like just and then they can just go to town and just do, you know, Sasha Banks Charlotte for like the next fucking three pay-per-views or whatever to get them over.
Two things I want to mention here very, very quickly. I think another thing that doesn't help, and I agree, the teams thing just kills it, because you need to get individuals over. And then the whole thing with the Revolution is complete lip service so far. It's okay, so you're telling us something, but you're not showing us anything. That doesn't fucking help.
It's just something different for the division. That's all it is. It's another something different, because we've seen everyone fight everyone a million times. So just some new faces, and this was how it started.
That's ultimately all. It's not. They're not changing the dynamics, really. They've just effectively put some more faces in
And given them more time.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right that, you know, the multi women's matches and the sort of faction, everything doesn't work, because you need to focus on one or two talents and emphasize them to get them over first. Then you can gradually bring more people in. It's the oversaturation that's an issue. It's not presented any differently to how it was prior to these women coming on board. You know, all the sort of the pinky swears and all that sort of thing. Mm. It's all
the presentation of the entire thing needs to change, in the sense of these women need to never cut promos. For Christ's sake, who thinks that it's a good idea for these women to be out there for 10 minutes doing promos?
Because
because if there's anything they should steal from Ryan Ward's great booking in NXT of the Divas, it's the fact that they do the UFC style videos where they splice in sound bites. So because anytime these girls have to do a live promo or any kind of live talking at all, where they have to either project their character as Sasha Demetrius, and she's the most major league character of the bunch. I mean, she was on commentary, she just didn't.
That's terrible.
She was dire. And it's like, these women can't do promos if you stick a mic in front of their face. Do the UFC style videos like they do in NXT, it will do far more for them. I thought they actually got that too, since they did that one on Raw a few weeks ago with Sasha, that I thought was really good.
Fair, that's actually a fair point. I do agree with that on the promos. It's not easy for them to just go out and cut the promos, because, as you said, in NXT, they haven't been essentially taught that and given the opportunity. Everything's been done like with the UFC videos, so they haven't actually had to do like microphone in front of face and cut a promo. So when they're there to try and sink or swim on Raw, they're sinking. So I absolutely agree on that. For the meantime, I think you said the UFC videos is absolutely the right way to go. It's one team of people are doing it well and the other team aren't.
This is the thing, and that's a great point you touched on there, because I think that what's actually quite funny about this entire thing, big picture, there's kind of a sadistic comedy in this for me, of the whole idea of the Divas Revolution being to get the women kind of treated on equal part of men as opposed to a sideshow. Well, look how well they fucking booked the guys! The Raw is fucking terribly booked, everybody's a mid-carder, no one gets over, so it's like, I don't want to be like, you get what you asked for, but they've never, they script the guys too. So if they script the women, you can't expect different results.
That's the thing, the difference between two shows. NXT, they do a much better job of hiding weaknesses and highlighting strengths and giving guys a bit of freedom when they have a talent to do something, like an Owens with his promo, say. But on Raw, they've got their formula, and it's for men or women, it's that they have their formula and they won't change. Unless you're Brock.
But if they're not given the time to sort of perfect it elsewhere, it is unfair to then expect them to just be able to do it on Raw. But to Liam's point, you know, the 50-50 booking, wins and losses here and there, every bloke's expected to be able to just cut a promo, so every woman is as well, you know, in many respects they're not treated differently.
No, so they can't complain when they fucking get the kind of reaction they did on Raw, because if they did this similar thing with guys like Wade Barrett, Jack Swagger and guys of that level and stuck them out there in the exact same scenario, it would have got the exact same reaction from that exact same crowd.
I mean, don't they all go to Raw singing Stuck in the Middle with You?
They're obviously a lot more nurtured on NXT, and that's actually, again, something, you know, the other team needs to figure out, and with the guys as well, because you can see, like, on NXT, they give Owens all the time in the world for him to cut his promos or do, like, the backstage skits or whatever, because the guy knows how to do it. But when it comes to Devitt, you get you just get the UFC videos, or you get three lines. He comes out and says three lines, and that's about it. So they kind of recognize, like, they can't have, because Devitt's champion, they can't have him be a mute. He has to say something, but we'll just narrow down exactly what he says. So they know what they're doing. And yeah, because they only have an hour's time to fill, and they have plenty of time to do it, that's the benefit of it. So it's like, yeah, shouldn't you try and do that with the other shows then, if that's working? In terms of, like, the Divas Revolution, this is one thing. There's two things that kind of grate my goat. Yeah. to coin a phrase, grate the goat.
That's going to live on in future episodes.
Grate the goat. One is just Stephanie's sex stink all over it all the time, where she just, like, pops out. Like the same as with the NXT show, she comes out and just like, oh yeah, the NXT Divas, I bought out. It's like, go fuck yourself. And then, like, the second one is they keep putting over this whole point of women are now breaking out, because, like, they haven't been for the last, like, 20, 30, 40 years. But look, like, women are breaking out in sports and onto social media, and they keep saying Ronda Rousey, right? They keep saying Ronda Rousey.
They've got a clip of Ronda, so that's the only reason they say that fucking line, is because it gives them a chance to show the clip of Ronda.
Oh yeah, yeah. They have this image of Ronda Rousey, who's just, like, obviously the female name in the world at the moment, and they're trying to hook these divas onto it to say, like, look, they're very similar to them. Here's my issue. In no fucking way, shape or form, and I hope I'm not going to be proven wrong on this, there's no way in hell you see Ronda Rousey on fucking Total Divas. This Total Divas bullshit, which is to accommodate, that's the word, to accommodate the fucking Bellas, these melodramas like, oh, I don't know what fucking sofa to buy for the house, and just all this bullshit. You're really portraying women as being, like, these proper athletes that can compete alongside the men for respect, when you have the fucking Bellas on Total Divas. Like, Nikki Bella complained to John Cena because he doesn't understand her. It's just like, it's just fucking bullshit. It's just like, get rid of Total Divas or change the format of the show so it's more serious in content.
Certainly the thing is here, again, it's no different with the men. They've always tried to appeal to every possible audience. Yeah, they want, like, the best of every world,
but not appeal to their
a million people watch that Total Divas show every week. So someone's watching it, so you understand why they do it.
So what do you think, other than everything that we just discussed for the last 20 minutes, is it
what's
just
the conclusion?
Is the answer just as simple as saying, Sasha Banks, you're the top heel, here's the belt, you can defend it on pay-per-views? Because the thing is, they're in a luxurious position here in the sense that their pay-per-views are attended consistently by smart mark crowds. They could get away with doing what they do on NXT now more than any other time previously, and they haven't done it yet. I think they're going that direction now by talking about on Raw about how the belt's the big thing. Is it just that simple? Just fuck this whole thing off. Let's get some individuals over. Let's put the belt on Sasha, and let's just build a steady stream of challenges and try and get them all over.
Well, that's what
simple as everything that works in wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
It is. I don't disagree with you, but the issue is patience there, and having the patience to do it. And as we've seen with this company over the years, perseverance isn't really one of their virtues.
It's just they're trying to put over too many women at the same time, and it looks like none of them are getting over because just they can't put, like, a direction on it.
I don't think they're really trying to get the girls over. They're trying to get over the brand of and the idea of the Divas Revolution. That's the problem. It's the company, not the individuals, and it's always a star-driven business.
Yeah, but I mean, the flip side is, although it would be great to book simple, you know, Sasha just to win the belt once a month on pay-per-view, when the crowd is going to be more willing to go along with it, you still got 3 hours Raw every week, and you're on the fly booking, and you could have at least one, sometimes two segments with the women in matches, and they want to get them all on there because they're all on Total Divas. So as we said, from top to bottom, the standard isn't high, and so we're always going to have that overall we're still going to always have that problem of shitty matches because they need to get those faces on every show.
Moving along to another division that I'm very keen to discuss. The New Day's performance at SummerSlam was a shining beacon of hope for me for when it comes to tag team wrestling in this day and age. Please don't let me be the only one to just verbally fellate the fantastic celebration of the New Day after they won the tag team championships.
They've been fucking great for
ages. They've been great
ages,
for a while.
Pretty much as soon as they turned heel, they've been amazing. Yeah. Said before, Kofi, I just absolutely love the guy. I said,
did this charisma come from?
I know. Have you ever seen the segment on Raw when they dunk over the guy's head yet?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
And then they carry off Kofi like Superman under their arms, just to Big E running around the ring trying to take off.
Big E's brilliant.
Yeah.
Doing Jimmy Del Rey proud on some of those.
And then Xavier, great in the role as well, not wrestling.
Yeah. He's awesome, man. He's really good.
He's really good. And then he just pulls out a trumpet just to top it all off.
as you said, they once they turned heel, they finally were given a chance and to put it to work, and it seems they've been given more and more opportunities to do this. And it's just like, when you see what they did at SummerSlam and Raw, of course the Brooklyn crowd, the New York crowd are going to cheer, because New York's always like the heel freaking characters if they're entertaining enough. So first thought, with the SummerSlam match itself, it wasn't a perfect match, but all in all, it was probably my favourite match of the undercard, probably due to New Day being so entertaining. It was a match I really enjoyed all the way, and I thought it built up really well towards the end. I thought not only did New Day obviously look superb, but I thought Titus did as well. Titus is this guy I've always liked. There's something about that guy. I don't know if he's got it, but he has something similar to it that just makes him instantly watchable. I mean, Darren Young,
it's not in ring ability.
Darren Young's got like he's solid
there.
He's there, but Titus has got so much charisma, and he gets a hot tag, he's just fucking like back breaking them and so on. And just the crowd are weighing for the seal. I always think it's a seal he's doing, but it's like, but yeah, the New Day absolutely just stole the show. As you said, it's just like out of nowhere, like Kofi suddenly got a character and Big E's suddenly charismatic and like Xavier Woods is relevant. It's just and it's just like they all played their parts well. That's why this group works so well, and why I'm now instantly worried that they're gonna break them apart. Xavier's just a great character inside, just talking trash, where it's like he's the first. I'm gonna link him to another name, but I don't mean this as an exact comparison, but very kind of similar to Cornette in terms of just the motor mouth ringside, which I think is great because you haven't seen that for a while outside of Paul Heyman, and even then Paul Heyman doesn't motor mouth at ringside very often now. The celebration, I haven't laughed like that in a long time. My face was hurting afterwards because I was just laughing so much. Where it was just, Kofi's little kind of like bouncing up and down was like hilarious. But it was Big E running around and then doing the gigolo gyrating that just made the crack me up so much I had to rewind it and then watch it again. And then I noticed Kofi like cronking away
and teeth showing.
Right, yeah. And I was just like, these guys are over now. They're hugely over. And it's like, Jesus, like, how long is it going to be now when WWE decides to turn a baby face and just kind of like screw this in the ass?
I really hope not. Although it is very emblematic of the times we live in where they put them as baby faces, they get a heel reaction. They put them as heels, they get a baby face reaction. There's an interesting, and this isn't an original thought from me, but I was reading online, somebody drawing the parallel between them and Edge and Christian. When Edge and Christian first kind of gained their personality out of the blue, where it's like, it's as if they just were given it's the all clear to just, all right, just fuck, just be yourselves.
That's the thing, it's so refreshing, because it's one of, oh God.
I think that's it.
Yeah,
that's,
how many others are there? Where it's guys who are actually just having fun, thinking of things themselves, just coming out and doing stuff they're coming up with themselves. It's different to everyone else. It's just, yeah, just the celebrations. I mean, you said you can't remember the last time you laughed so much. The last time I laughed that much was the SmackDown when Xavier pinned El Torito.
Oh yeah,
I don't watch SmackDown, yeah. So that's right.
No, I saw that, was brilliant. That's your recommendation.
So it's, yeah, they're just brilliant, and it's total just a complete breath of fresh air. So
saying that, with like how great New Day are, I'll have to admit though, on the following night on Raw, I did mark out for Dudley's return. Angle, I did mark out for it.
You are stealing my gimmick as the master of segues on this show, because that is where I was going to go next. Because this is the encouraging thing with, they're feeling like, because the thing with the tag team division is the standing of the belts and the teams with, you know, the Matadors and the Ascension and this rogues gallery of teams, it feels like it's like the Young Stallions and the Islanders and like teams of that ilk in the 80s without any kind of real star power there. And the New Day's obviously getting over huge. The infusion of the Dudleys I think is really going to help, because it's just, people are going to take them with a great deal of credibility anyway.
It's the gravitas of the
division. Yeah, it's like, okay, we know that these guys are a legit all-time great tag team, so now it gives the New Day a great foil, and the Uso, you know, the other Usos coming back soon. I think there's potential here for some great stuff.
I think that's why Dudley's coming back is so key, because I mean they obviously had the Usos at first, and then one of them got injured. They had Tyson and Cesaro, which to a certain extent was starting to get over right before Tyson got injured. The Lucha Dragons, they haven't done anything with them since they've arrived, enough to make the audience believe in anything about them. The Last Matadors, is just fucking atrocious gimmick anyway, and they need to change that straight away.
But Kieran does love the ball.
Oh, I love that fucking little ball.
That ball's hilarious. But yeah, at least do something with that team, because that gimmick isn't working at all. So like everyone that they have had investment in have gotten injured and are out, and the people that they're left with, the crowd don't give a shit because they haven't treated them like they should be worthy of anything. So this is why the Dudleys is so vital right now. And yes, it got a big pop because it was in Brooklyn. Of course, it was going to get a good big pop. But it's so vital because it elevates the New Day, and it just adds relevance to the tag titles as well, at least in the short term while they're there. And to be honest, as I said, I marked out for the segment. Yeah, I just thought the segment was fantastic, and I'm now really looking forward to that feud.
Well, it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't try and douse some cold water on all these flames here. Just to backtrack slightly, I haven't always been the biggest New Day fan. Even when Liam was telling me I was wrong about it and telling me to give it a chance, the way it had gone, I'll say this much. They were two brilliant back-to-back performances. And I do think that the tag match, which I thought was going to be an absolute train wreck, was good fun. Really enjoyable match. But I am a bit concerned, only in the sense of, I'm not entirely sure they'll be in a rush to turn New Day face as you fear, because I'm not sure how much the reaction they've got over those two nights will translate for, you know, going further afield away from New York, away from that type of crowd, because you're not going to get that crowd every week on Raw. The Dudleys, I agree with you all, absolutely, it helps fill a credibility void that's been in the tag division for how many years, we could go back now. And I say that not being the biggest Dudley Boys fan by any means. I acknowledge the reputation and the way in which they're viewed by the audience. My concern is that the New Day get fed to them quite quickly. That's what worries me. And I hope I'm going to be wrong on that. But again, would anyone be shocked if that happens and we have quite a quick turnaround in there? And a title change?
I don't see them. My feeling would be a worry the other way, that the Dudleys are only seen as a short-term deal just to get over the New Day. I don't see them jobbing at New Day. Well, I know you've said it. I don't think... My gut says no, to be honest.
Okay. The thing that I love is the fact they didn't just blitz the New Day. They went out the ring, did the brief stare-down with the primetime players too. It's like, okay, they're actually making this... far more interesting and making it about the teams, not just one rivalry. So yeah, I think this is a sign of fun things to come. Moving on to something else from SummerSlam that aroused my interest, if you will, the Kevin Owens Cesaro match. I want to gauge feelings around the table on this one, because I wasn't a big fan of the way this came off.
It's a strange one, because it's not that I didn't enjoy the match necessarily. I found it a bit strange. I think it's partly because I think I had unreasonable expectations for the match as well. I will say that much, which I don't think it could probably have ever lived up to. But it seemed to me almost like the match was used as a bit of a rehab for Owens, really. I mean, I know he went over in the end, but it seemed to me like the match, rather than there being a bit more give and take, and you may disagree here, I thought it was very much a match to showcase Owens and to make him look more important after the sort of rough treatment he's had recently.
They worked really hard.
Oh, they did.
And I don't think the match itself was really anything wrong with it, but I mean, the crowd hurt it massively. The place, limbs yourself, so it was on too late in the show for a meaningless match. But I also think that the segment of the audience that gravitates towards Cesaro is the same segment which gravitates towards Owens, but they prefer Owens, and I think that hurts Cesaro's face massively.
Especially when Owens was wrestling as a babyface in the early going anyway, yeah, with the flip dive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Owens overall, I just... Although he's great as a heel, he's a fantastic heel, I just think in that company, the money's with him as a face. I just don't... There's too many people like him to be an effective heel, and I think that then hurts... anyone who may be anti-Owens or anti the heel act. It kind of negates that, and I just think he comes across as... it dilutes the heel act, and I think that hurts matches when it's a face people aren't willing to boo, like, you know, and well, Cena basically. But.
And that was part of the reason why I hated that feud. Like, you're bringing him in to hopefully be a big heel, against John Cena, where not only is he going to lose in the end, but he's also not going to get booed by the vast majority of the audience. It seemed completely counterproductive.
Well, who wouldn't cheer a man who powerbombs Machine Gun Kelly off a stage?
Precisely.
But just as sort of a segue to your point, Liam, there about Owens wrestling as a babyface, strikes me as so odd, because Owens is one of the few in the company who, if you take SummerSlam out of the equation, up to now has worked incredibly hard to be a genuine heel and to act like a heel. I'm not saying he sort of played the complete chicken shit heel a la Chris Candido or something like that, you know, pumping the arms and he runs away type of thing. But, you know, the backing away from a fight, the spots he'll tease in a match, but to reference in the ladder match with Balor where you know, he positions him with the ladder against the apron and teases his charge that maybe he's going to do the cannonball or something like that, and then he just runs up and punches him. Little things like that, where I think up to now he'd worked very hard to come across as a genuine heel in a lot of instances. Even in the feud with Cena, you know, he wasn't pandering to the Cena sucks chance or anything like that, at least not in my mind. So I found it very strange in that instance that when you get to the SummerSlam match, he wrestled very much like a babyface.
When I think about the layout of this match, of two guys who, and you can tell they put them on that late because they thought they can go this late because they're going to get the great reaction from the crowd, they're going to have a very good match, it's going to be great. But that audience, first of all, again, like I said off air, I think it was on the show too late, but not only that, I think that the dynamic of two guys who that crowd likes anyway, it's like, yeah, you don't want to see one guy lose.
Exactly.
So it's like doing a babyface match in but not, and I just think the whole, it was messy. The match itself, again, like you said, they worked hard, worked a very good match, but the crowd's just not with it, and that just killed it for me.
Yeah, in terms of the Owens heel or face conundrum, it's, for me, I said he's a fantastic heel, but given the look, he doesn't look special when he works a flat out heel. Owens seems special when he's doing his shit, he's getting his shit in, but obviously that's it's leaning towards the face side. So if you want him to be a mid-card heel, then fine, have him work heel. But
that's what you're getting.
Yeah, if you want him to be anything special, then you got to let him do his stuff, which isn't inclined to being fostering heel reactions for me.
I was fully expecting, for me personally, to think that this was going to be the match of the night. It's slightly disappointed, and I think it is multiple reasons why. But yeah, if you're going to use like a buffer match, then yeah, the comic book one would have been like a better solution. Yeah, I absolutely agree with Kieran with the fact that both of them were really popular and on the cusp at the moment. They've had good performances recently, mainly because they've been against John Cena. It did feel like it was just like a way to rehabilitate Owens a little bit. It's just like get him a win, another win on pay-per-view. So now he's technically, what, 2-for-2 now?
So 50-50.
Yeah, 50-50. He was saying like Kevin Owens is extraordinary as a heel. I don't even think extraordinary is a strong enough word. And this guy is fucking just like the detail that he does to be a prick, to be a genuine prick, is just fantastic. And I think he's an outstanding heel. But I absolutely get your point, Kieran, about how, because I think of like that reaction he got when he first came into NXT, when he was basically babyface because everyone was just glad to see him. And I think that is probably the way for him to stand out, at least from the rest of the pack of, you know, the Ortons and so on, because it's quite clear that unless you're like a heel champion, like the heels just get fucking buried anyway. Kevin Owens with Cena, but you think like Rusev with Cena and Wyatt and so on, they're all just treading ground. While his better goal might be to be a babyface so he can try and get like noticed a little bit more, though the other counter argument on that one is have a look at fucking Dolph Ziggler or Cesaro himself.
I was going to say the shit treatment as we've referenced throughout the podcast isn't reserved to one section of the roster by any means in any context.
I didn't like the fact that he had a match immediately after having a ladder match the previous night, and we talked about like how in the ladder match, like Owens, you and me, Liam, we were talking about how Owens seemed like he was holding back just a little bit because obviously he knew he was performing the next night. Well, he still did some shit in that match. He was still getting like knocked around, and yet the very next night for the Cesaro match, he's not selling anything. And it's because, I don't know whether that's just, I can't think that's Owens' ignorance of forgetting to fucking sell anything, or whether it was just like, I don't know, Vince, the officials, whatever, thought like
well, the people who are watching SummerSlam wouldn't have watched NXT.
Well, I Divas hugged one night and then feuded the next night. So
it could have sold a little bit. It could have sold like he was a bit injured or something.
First of all, it's not even that. They showed the replay of him getting the fuck beaten out of it in a ladder match. So there's no. Oh, it doesn't matter if you watch both. They showed the footage. He's been in a ladder match. He lost the ladder match. Yeah. He got the shit beat out of him. There he is walking around like he's and does a flip dive in the first 5 minutes of the match.
That's going in. I thought the logical story would be he beats Finn. Cesaro, there isn't a place from the top of the card on the main roster. NXT needs guys, so have Owens wins the title back. He's banged up the next night because of the ladder match and loses to Cesaro. And Cesaro can go to NXT and do a little feud for the title on there and give Cesaro some chance to shine to an audience that actually likes him. So
keeps the NXT cred alive.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, gives them some. You know, NXT is a place to see guys who can go. But no.
Don't you dare send Cesaro down there and rob me of him on Raw.
But this ties into the bigger thing with Cesaro, and this is a debate we've had before about whether or not he's got the ability to connect. This has to be considered kind of a black mark against Cesaro, the fact that in front of a crowd that Vince probably would think, well, he's probably going to get a great reaction here, he really didn't. The big criticism for Cesaro has been the whole he can't connect malarkey, and it seemed like that was changing for the Cesaro section signs and the way that the momentum generally feels on Raw in the last few weeks. This didn't do him any favours in terms of breaking him out of the pack.
No, it really didn't. And I find it particularly depressing because up to this point, you were certainly right. If anyone remembers that, I believe it was our second show, the roster cutting show, when I think the words I used to describe Cesaro was money. And you quickly shot it down.
And said money is the exact opposite word that I would use.
Yeah, and unfortunately up to this point, you're being proven right for many reasons, which just absolutely break what remains of my black heart. The frustrating thing for me is, as we've talked about, I think there are extenuating circumstances to why the crowd reacted the way they did to that match. It wasn't particularly anything negative on Owens, wasn't particularly anything negative on Cesaro, at least in the way the fans view them. Vince would absolutely look at it in the cold light of day and think I was right.
You didn't seize the brass ring after all, did you bald-headed bastard?
And after I saw it, I did just get that sense of, right, okay, that's going to be it for Cesaro for quite some time. He's back down to the, well, I say back down, he never left, you know. You're staying with the also-rans, and we'll occasionally try and put a bit of emphasis on you to have a really good match for someone that we do want to elevate.
And I think that the comparison I used on episode 2 way back when was Chris Benoit, of the guy that they don't see big money in, but you can always rely on for a good match.
I think Cesaro would actually be better off in NXT, where he can just wrestle. They can work around the fact that he's not the best on the mic or whatever, and they can just let him wrestle. I mean, I'm of the persuasion that NXT should go all out with NXT being its own brand, and just like stop the transfers over, stop moving the people over, bring back the people who've left NXT recently who are synonymous with it, and just have them as their own brand. And two people who I'd also take over there, just because they're not doing anything and might as well be in NXT, is Cesaro and Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, but the priority is not NXT. Ultimately, there's got to be a wider perspective on what NXT is. NXT is just the nice to have compared to what the Raw and SmackDown is. Raw and SmackDown is where they can use the guys in such a way where they can actually make money and sell big merchandise. Now NXT does help, but there's a reason why they're called up in the first place. It's not so they can make money with NXT. It's so they can use that to make money for themselves.
Well, that's it. It's always you've got to keep that perspective and not lose focus of, at the end of the day, what NXT actually is.
And besides, I mean, there is part of the fun of NXT is when is this guy going to be on the big roster? Mm. So you need that. Always that turnover until the point comes when people are actually resenting guys getting called up because they're going to get killed. But
we talked about all the major talking points here, I think, from SummerSlam, so I'm going to throw this last section as just a general anything that anybody wants to get off their chest over the last 3 days. Big stuff's been going down.
We predicted SummerSlam Wyatt's Shield -1 would end with the third man, and we got it a day later.
We got it one day
later.
We were right.
was it a Braun, is it?
Braun Strowman.
Yeah, a reasonably impressive debut. I mean, like, okay, I don't think he's going to be an amazing worker. He's not going to be in the great realms of Luke Harper. But I thought, like, from the looks wise, he definitely fits the bill. Man, the guy's fucking huge. When he looks bigger than Harper and Bray, and they aren't small guys. when he looks bigger than them, and like he did some like decent stuff, some little nice little moves and stuff, it looks like he's going to be the powerhouse. It's just nice to see the Wyatt family expand again. And it does make me wonder, like, when he's fit, like, how Eric Rowan's going to fit into that. If they bring him back and he just melds back into the family again, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. So they become, like, a four-man group now, because I actually think, like, they should expand it to make it a proper huge family that's trying to just infest the company. But if they bring back Eric Rowan and, like, he's now been... he can't get back into the family, and Eric Rowan ends up being one of the people he's fighting against... the Wyatt family.
Rowan, Ambrose and Reigns versus...
then I have a fuck to give, because then I'm like, no.
Sticking with the Wyatts, have him and Harper as a tag team.
However dreaded this thought might be to some people, I'd probably have the new guy and Rowan as a tag team and leave Harper to free roam, because Harper's better than the tag division.
Well, I'm glad we spent 10 minutes there talking about the extra importance on the tag division now,
because the team of Braun and Eric...
I never said they should be tag champs.
The sheep are coming. The thing with this Braun fella... that debut just reminded me so much of Zeus. When he first came in as a guy who looked like he could do very little.
Yeah.
And was just... everybody sold for him, and that was nice. He did one cool move. His face is quite childish, you know?
Yeah. That works.
It fits.
Lenny of Mice and Men fame.
It fits, like, because, you know, they're a deranged, wacky crew. Yeah. And in terms of the work rate, I mean, he's taking the place of fucking Rowan, so...
yeah.
It's not the end of the world, for fuck's sake, and...
I'm saying it is weird to see them kind of have Reigns sell that much for the guides, because Reigns is on such kind of thin ice anyway in terms of the way he's being protected these days.
He's a big guy, so Vince immediately has a hard-on for him.
Well, you didn't sound too concerned yourself there, G, when you were talking about his size and how much bigger he is than Harper. I thought you were channeling your inner Vince McMahon for a second. As Kieran alluded to there, he's just taking the place of Rowan, and what we see from him is very limited, because otherwise he will be Zeus, and you'll think he's capable of very little, and he'll even not manage to meet those low expectations. But on the subject of big useless lumps, as we're getting things off our chest, Mr. Corbin of NXT fame. Because you talk about dread, G, of people being called up. This is one that I do dread, because I think he's going to be called up sooner rather than later. And I can't think of someone, because they emphasised his size on the takeover show. I mean, how big he was, and I looked and thought, the guy's really tall.
Yeah,
his physique's not actually that good. He hasn't got a good physique.
He's got a flabby belly, soft.
He's soft, but they're talking about him like he's a monster. And I think, yeah, they're going to call this guy up, and my God, I've never seen someone who looks like that carry such little presence. Say what you want about certain big men in the business, Sid being a prime example.
I was going to suggest Heidenreich.
but
not a bad comparison, actually, for the physique, now I think about it.
But to use someone like Sid, who, you know, a big guy, and we've all ragged on how terrible softball Sid is, and I'm not going to change that opinion anytime soon. But at least he had a presence about him. I'll at least give him that. There was, you know, the way he carried himself was more than your typical just long beanpole. Whereas this guy's just vapid. He has got nothing. Yeah. And this company doesn't do managers, so they're not going to give him a mouthpiece. But they're going to call him up, and they're going to push him for a while, and it's going to lead to some terrible television.
Yeah, I think this is obviously... What you've stated, Carl, is exactly why the NXT fans have like turned on him. I mean, they liked him very briefly when he first came out, and I don't think his feud with Rhino helped. I don't necessarily think this feud with Samoa Joe's helped either. I don't think it helped Samoa Joe. Whilst I didn't hate the match at all, I just thought they could have better use for Samoa Joe on that show. But I'm absolutely on the same wavelength as you, Carl. I don't see anything in this guy. He showed really no charisma. The only time I actually saw anything was when that promo, which me and Lee were talking about, where they talk about his past, where I thought, well, at least there was something there, because at least they finally told us something about the character. We've had
UFC
to wait.
UFC soundbite video,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah. We've had to wait like about 3 to 4 months just to hear about what where did he come from. We've just been seeing this guy walk out, hit one move, and then fuck off. And it's just like, and he's not Goldberg.
So it's like we've had to wait this long just for some information on him. So I was just kind of glad of it, and it was like quite interesting information to know, even if some of it might be slightly exaggerated.
I'm not as down on him as you guys are. I was when he was a face. I just thought, what a horrible fit that he's, you know, they're force feeding him and he's just so fucking green. I think he's infinitely better as a heel. I thought I was pleasantly surprised with the Rhino match. The Joe match was, we'll probably expect more from Joe, but it wasn't bad. I just think the guy is super green, and I could see room for him to improve as a heel. Obviously there's room for him to improve. I do fear he's going to get called up too soon because he's just so green, but I don't think he's a lost cause.
It won't be the last call because they won't abandon him yet. You know, they'll keep going.
No, I mean, in terms of us as fans, this guy is going to be completely worthless, shoved down his throats. But yeah, the over push before he's ready is going to be the killer for him. He needs 2-3 years in NXT to grow as a heel, and then we'll see, I think.
And if that were to happen, I'd quite happily hold my hands up and say, you know, yeah, okay, he's developed beyond anything I saw of him, and that could conceivably happen, as you say, so maybe I shouldn't be as negative on him. But again, the issue is, and I've mentioned it before, patience, and this company doesn't do patience, and he will get called up too soon.
I would really like to think that that's how they're going to do it, Kieran, but no, they're not. Basically, the trajectory that I see for him is that whether he's going to be the immediate next challenger, or by the end of the year he will beat Devitt for the belt. The NXT
wow,
belt,
you think so?
And he will hold the belt for a while, and then he'll debut on the main roster after WrestleMania.
Right, you think he's going to? I don't think this actually does tie nicely into where actually things are going with the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic they announced for Seems NXT. So. Devitt's in the tournament, his partner's Samoa Joe. So yeah. It's an interesting thing where this is either going to set up them as a team, which is going to produce some good stuff to watch, or Joe versus Balor is near, and that's the impression that I would get watching from TakeOver, far more than Corbin getting the belt near the end of the year, because to me Joe Devitt is where it's at.
The tag tournament goes down, I think there's going to be like a few surprises. I think there might be some of the WWE teams appear in there. Wouldn't be surprised if Dudley's get put in there for a match or so on. I wouldn't put it past that they get maybe some other teams that aren't necessarily contracted to the company anymore. I could probably see a Kendrick and London appearing at some point.
Not sure if Paul London would be welcome back after some of his comments.
Well, I guess so. But, you know, I'm just trying to think, like, who's been tag teams before. I don't know, they might do New Age Outlaws, might do Tuuk, for fuck's sake, I don't know. Or
Outlaws, I could see.
Or they might, yeah. Oh, what about Yuha Nation's debut? Any thoughts on that?
Oh, Apollo Crews.
Just a debut, but I mean, it's
first impression. Pretty good.
Yeah,
when it comes to following the NXT roster and seeing how they train, I'm guessing they're going to omit the part where he injects the needle.
Yeah, I thought that when I watched him in Dragon Gate, because it's like, wow, this guy's suspiciously big. I wonder if he'll maintain this size when if the day comes, and you assume the day would come, look at the size of the guy. And he got the corp and he looks the same, so something's going on.
Watch this space, folks.
Yeah.
But we talk about Corbin being the guy that's going to get called up soon. If anybody, I think, is going to get fast-tracked, it's him.
Oh, I might do. Yeah, and that would be terrible. But, it needs time to develop, like, what the character's going to be if he's being babyface. What exactly the dynamic is he going to bring to the show before they call him up? But, he probably will end up being, like, fast-tracked. But I think he's well and firmly in the queue. Zayn when he comes back, Itami probably
Zayn is the only guy who may actually like get Owens over as a heel, I think, when he goes up to the main roster. So
they're
so
good together. They got a great chemistry together, where Sammy is just as likable as Owens is to that audience. Zayn is more likable to that audience. It's not like Cesaro where it's kind of mix and match. It's the dynamic between the two that's really interesting.
But yeah, I just think Yuha Nation's just in a queue at the moment. But I think I'll be intrigued to see how he develops. I think there's definitely something there.
The thing is though, I can see with them doing the NXT tour in the United Kingdom in December, they're going to keep some of these guys around. Like Balor's going to be there. He's been advertised already for it, and so is Samoa Joe, for guys that are going to be on this tour. Whereas a guy like, I think a timing pool will probably stay there for a while as well. Yeah. But a guy like Zayn or a guy like Apollo Crews, who's not pivotal to it, and if Vince sees him and just thinks, you know what, he's not key for NXT by any means, we can take him out and it'll still do as good. I absolutely see him being pulled.
I wouldn't put it past to them to still have people like Kevin Owens and like the Divas and so on still appearing in NXT, kind of doing double duty. I think they're going to do that for quite a while, but just because it works. It works at the moment. If they can do double duty, then they'll make them do double duty. So, and I don't think that makes NXT any worse for it, you know.
Just to summarise then, we have talked about a lot of this 3-day period. NXT, SummerSlam, Monday Night Raw, just very quickly around the table, immediate direction, are we looking at Seth and Cena for the next few months?
Certainly seem like it. Well, what's the point in Sting then?
It's just a way to put Rollins over, I guess.
So he's going to start with the immediate match, will it?
Yeah.
Or will it be...
It's
already been announced.
Is it what title is it for?
The World Title and World Champions.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought maybe they'd do like the US titles, kind of like, you know, the Masters. If you've won one, you can always go and compete in the tournament or something like that.
Yeah. I like that idea.
And then, so, you know, maybe fight Sting and Cena. But,
Cena beats him. Yeah. Sting doesn't, but since that's in for the US title, then you get the rematch the next month. Rollins beats Cena. Yeah. Cena gets, you know, pulled away somewhere else. Rollins goes on to ? Is what I'm guessing.
I would generally think it would probably be a Survivor Series. Like, I think it'd be like Sting versus Rollins Survivor Series, like team match, I'd imagine.
Authority versus Sting, yeah. Cena, and the forces of good. Very interesting 3 days. I don't agree necessarily with Dave Meltzer's opinion that wrestling is red hot right now, or WWE's red hot, the rating suggests otherwise, but
that post SummerSlam Raw rating's got to come across as a disappointment.
Yeah.
Oh, what was it?
Slightly a cunt hair above the average for the summer, which has been pretty low. Quite disappointing results there, but we've talked about a lot. We're going to talk about even more next week. Again, we're going to be talking about the luckiest and unluckiest wrestlers in the history of the business, and we want your nominations for who you think slot into both categories and why. Of course, send those across to scgradio@hotmail.com and we will get to them on the show next week. For G. John Chase.
I wonder what grated goat will be like on pizza.
For Kieran O'Rourke.
It's been a pleasure.
And for Carl Jones.
I still say Brock should have won.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here. Just wait 6 months, you'll be fine.
Yes.